Mordechai has arranged for his cousin to use her beauty to become the queen. Hanging out with the local Hasidim, he had heard about the Rebbe, who said that if God meant to save the Jews, it would happen by a woman's hand. And this gave him the idea of putting his cousin Esther up to it. And Esther is willing, but there is a complication.
Welcome to Season 2 of The Stories Jews Tell, a weekly podcast with Professor Ruth Weiss, brought to you by the Tikva Fund. Today, we'll be reading Songs of the Megillah by Itzik Manger. This season of the podcast is sponsored by Robert L. Friedman.
Well, how could I fail to include in this podcast series one of the most beloved modern Yiddish poets, the bad boy of Yiddish literature, Itzik Manger? There are poets like Lord Byron in England and Vladimir Mayakovsky in Russia who seem to live as much off the page as on. And there are performer poets like Bob Dylan and Leonard Cohen whose poems are inseparable from their authors. Well, Manger was that latter kind of poet personality, cultivating his image as a Yiddish folk poet, and many of whose poems were set to music, who signed himself Itzik rather than the formal Yitzchak, claimed his proud status as the son of a tailor rather than descendant of rabbis, and enjoyed making himself a public nuisance when drunk. But we must make do with the poems, so I will say only enough about the poet to introduce today's reading, his Songs of the Megillah. Manger was born in 1901 in Chernivtsi, now located in southwest Ukraine, then still part of the polyglot Austro-Hungarian Empire. German was the dominant language, yet the Yiddish-speaking presence was strong enough for Chernivtsi to be also called Jerusalem on the Prut. In 1907, the city was chosen as the venue for the first international Yiddish conference. The same spirit of nationalism that was then fueling anti-Jewish politics inspired among Jews themselves strong national tendencies that included emphasis on Yiddish as the Jewish folk language. Though Manger knew his German literature and drew on everything from Goethe and Schiller to Grimm's fairy tales, he thumbed his nose at German high culture and pushed against cultural assimilation even harder than he did against Jewish religious orthodoxy and bourgeois conventions. The national boundaries of Europe changed after the First World War. In the late 1920s, Manger moved from what was then independent Romania to Warsaw, the capital of independent Poland. 10 years later, in 1938, his irregular status as a Romanian Jew forced him to leave for Paris, and from there he had the good fortune to get to England, where he spent the war. And after the war, he went to America, and then home to Israel, where he died in 1969. Ironically, the first full-scale biography of Manger recently appeared in German. What we do have in English, for those of you who want more of him, is a collection of his work translated and edited by Leonard Wolf and David Roskies, from which I've taken today's work. Manger wrote the Megillah songs, Die Megillah Lieder, in 1936, a dangerous time for the Jews of Europe. He had been channeling Bible stories into ballad form for what he called Midrash Itzik. Now, living among 300,000 Jews of Warsaw, he was also inspired to write something that could be set to music and staged. Last week, we saw how Kadya Molodovsky drew on Bible and Midrash for her up-to-date interpretation of the matriarchs Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. In his own time of heightened threat, Manger couldn't look for a better biblical source to work from than the Book of Esther. I will assume that you know the Book of Esther and can enjoy what Manger's prologue tells us is, quote, a kind of mischief-making on the model of Purim players in every age, unquote. Many European Jewish communities encouraged comic performances as part of the celebration of the Purim holiday. Manger, however, also sets out to correct a historical offense by including personages that the Bible has overlooked. Rather than making the Megillah contemporary in the way some theaters perform Shakespeare in modern dress, he splices modern Poland back into the ancient Persia so that we get both the parallels and the anachronisms. Like Purim, this is fun with a serious purpose. Manger's Megillah songs begin with the introduction of Mordechai, Esther's cousin and guardian, and the Persian king Ahasuerus. Who's that man at the king's gate with a hump on his back, the sneaky fellow who sidles up to eavesdrop when people talk? You mean to say you don't know his name, you little fool? Ah, that's the blessed Mordechai, the hero of the Megillah. He found favor with our king who's always drinking, whose shiny nose is always red, whose breath is always stinking. Our Jewish savior is Mordechai HaTzadik, a little hunchback Jew whose habit of hanging around and eavesdropping pays off when he hears the royal servants, Bigdan and Teresh, plotting against the king and makes sure that the monarch is informed. The king rewarded Mordechai with a permanent right to sell shoelaces, almonds, and kosher soap for sending those rebels to hell. So Mordechai is a shtadlan, a small-town intermediary, who will find the diplomatic way to get around the evil decree of the vizier, Haman. The Mordechai of the Bible already functions as a go-between, but this ingratiating chassid is less dignified than his biblical forebear, as is everyone else in Manger's parody. Next, enter Vashti, the deposed queen. Midrash was already in the habit of fleshing out some of the Bible's minor figures and filling in its missing action and motivations. Manger's Vashti is the daughter of a Polish nobleman who had urged her to marry a Lithuanian count instead of some unreliable distant ruler. Her refusal to appear naked when Ahasuerus summons her to his feast earns her a death sentence and a public execution. She sings sorrowfully that someone else will take her place while she rots in the ground. Young and beautiful the king's new wife will be, while the worms gnaw a young corpse as beautiful as she. Back, hangman, back! Don't come quite so soon. Let me stand another moment grieving here alone. As she is led to the gallows, a woman in the crowd says she would have jumped at the chance to come before the king naked. Regal Vashti only asks the bystanders to remember her kindly when they perform the Purim play. In Yiddish, she says, Ich geh auf ewig weg von hier, auf tumid weg von dannen. Nur als es mit spielen, dem Purim spiel, sollte es mich zum Gitten der Mannen. It should be Ich geh in the Polish pronunciation that she would have used. And that and the diction would have marked her as a Polishe. Vashti is a Polish countess with a thick Polish-Yiddish accent. So some of this comedy we are bound to miss in translation. With Vashti gone, we are introduced to Esther, the vehicle of Jewish salvation, as she primps nervously for her court appearance. Mordechai has arranged for his cousin to use her beauty to become the queen. Hanging out with the local Hasidim, he had heard about the Rebbe, who said that if God meant to save the Jews, it would happen by a woman's hand. And this gave him the idea of putting his cousin Esther up to it. And Esther is willing, but there is a complication. The missing character, whom the Bible left out, and whom Manger now introduces, is Fastrigosa, a tailor's apprentice and something of a folk poet, just like we know who. Fastrigosa was courting Esther and hoped to marry her, but though she has strong feelings for him, she prefers the wealthier option. Fastrigosa provides Manger's missing subplot of the Purim story. He had courted Esther passionately and threatened to kill himself should she refuse him. The still hopeful romantic hero sings to her from under her balcony. Remember, remember that rainy night at the gate when we clung together, and I whispered a secret in your ear, and we did not mind the weather. I whispered, "Esther, marry me. Let's elope to Vienna." You were wearing a calico dress and beads the color of henna. Well, the one time I saw this performed in Yiddish before an older audience, those lines, "Lo mir beide antläufen kan Wien," "Let's elope to Vienna," brought on such laughter that the cast had to take a pause. To an audience of people who had grown up in Europe, the thought of a Polish tailor eloping to Vienna may have seemed even funnier than the incongruity of him living in ancient Persia. The songs of the two lovers, each longing for the other, remind us that the original story of Esther lacks any romance. Here, it is all about love. Fastrigosa doesn't get the girl because he is a mere tailor's apprentice. Forget the Jewish angle. How about the unfairness of rich and poor? Manger claims that the ancient chroniclers did an injustice to these lowly tailors because they considered them unworthy of being included in a biblical story. The wealthier suitor always has the advantage over the needier one, let alone a king over a commoner. So Fastrigosa is jilted, and he doesn't take it well. At this point, there is an abrupt shift of scene. Under the heading, "Haman telephones Vaisosa in his editorial office," we hear Haman calling his son, who happens to be the editor of an anti-Semitic newspaper. Breathlessly, he reports that last night the king was attacked by a wild young man wielding a dagger and shouting, "You tyrant! Give me my Esther at once, or your days on earth are done. You think you're a king? Not at all. You're a bastard, a charlatan." Haman says the king is in the hospital, they've jailed the attacker, and that he, Vaisosa, should spread the news that this was done by the Jews. Haman uses Fastrigosa's assassination attempts to trigger the pogrom that he has always wanted to incite. So while entertaining and mocking his audience, Manger doesn't shortchange the Megillah's main concern, which is the way politics can be organized against the Jews and what they are expected to do about it. A lot comes together in the figure of the luckless tailor, who reminds us of Manger, but also of young Jews who had famously undertaken political assassinations. Thus, Hirsch Leckert, a shoemaker, was executed in 1902 for shooting the governor of Vilna, who had whipped Jewish workers for demonstrating against the Russian Tsar. And in 1926, Shalom Schwartzbard shot the Ukrainian nationalist leader Simon Petlura, who is blamed for massive pogroms. Manger's Fastrigosa embodies the same political impotence. Hitler had come to power in 1933, and by 1936 he had promulgated the Nuremberg Laws. Poland was by then openly anti-Semitic. The story is up to date. Fastrigosa, the Jewish tailor, is executed and mourned by his father and the fraternity of tailors. What makes it funny is that Fastrigosa is a jilted lover, acting not to save the Jews but out of sexual passion. Songs about birds and trees transform the hard-edged biblical plot into a gentler romantic tale. At the same time, in bitter irony, Esther's political triumph becomes Fastrigosa's death sentence. He may have tried to kill his rival out of love for Esther rather than to avenge the Jews, but Haman exploits his act for anti-Semitic purposes just the same. Manger's remaining songs of the Megillah, many styled like ballads, include one episode in which Mordechai drops into his synagogue on the way home from Esther's wedding, another in which the king, relieved to be still alive after the assassination attempt, doubts whether Esther would have mourned him had he been killed, which leads him into signing the anti-Jewish decree, another episode in which Esther agrees to her uncle's call for a fast, and then almost faints with hunger as she observes the fast of Esther. Another, in which Haman's wife, Zeresh, eggs him on against the scabby Jew, and instructs him on how to flatter Esther, which then becomes his undoing. And another episode in which the pious Mordecai is instructed by Satan in how to push Haman into Queen Esther's bed. It is after that fateful scene that the king changes course. The king is snuffling a certain sign that he is hopping mad. He mutters, "Who would have guessed that Haman would turn out to be bad? But there it is, the man I chose to be prime minister is a crazy pervert who treats the queen as if she were his whore. Lucky for me that Mordecai came rushing in today, dusty and panting and sweating, and said what he came to say. Your Majesty, watch Haman tonight. I think you'll find there's more to Haman than the plaster saint Your Majesty takes him for." Sure enough, between Mordecai's plotting and Esther's asking the king to kill Haman for his unwanted advances, Haman is led to the gallows, just like Vashti earlier in the play. Parenthetically, we note that where the Book of Esther is filled with banquet scenes, this one has public executions. So on the way to his own, Haman pleads with the hangman, "Plug up my ears to spare me the shame of the noisemakers drowning out Haman's name." The comical incongruities and anachronisms tell us how deeply the biblical text was baked into the heart of these Polish Jews. This included Manger and the younger parts of his audience who were no longer observing the fast of Esther or most of the Jewish religious obligations, but who still had the creative advantage of a rich inherited tradition. Traditional Jews could enjoy the parody that was part of the Purim tradition, and younger Jews responded to the new social and political touches, all part of the same evolving Yiddish-Jewish culture. Modern literary theory introduced the term defamiliarize to explain how authors change the expected version of something so as to provide readers with a new experience. Manger has certainly made the experience new, but by inviting the Yiddish tailors into the biblical story, I'd say that he refamiliarizes his audience with the biblical text. Fastrigosa's fate gradually takes over the story, so that the play ends with his mother, a Yiddish mame, lighting a memorial candle and singing a dirge for her beloved son. She berates Esther for her cruelty and disregard. "I wish she was dead and buried, that whore, that Esther, that queen. All the while that he lay in prison, she never inquired about him. What if she presides over Purim? A desolate Purim to her and to Mordecai, her uncle, the rich man, the entrepreneur." It's as though the mother were saying on behalf of Polish Jewry, "We were raised on the story of Esther's triumph, but meanwhile, we suffer political defeat. For the likes of us, and at this point in our history, there can be no easy reversals as there are in Megillat Esther. Haman would not be condemned to the gallows that were built for Mordecai, and Jews would not be allowed to kill those who would have murdered them." Manger, in other words, here expresses the incredible intimacy of Jews with the Tanakh, their baked-in Bible, and adds the undertow that was drawing a world of Jews to their execution. The Megillah songs of 1936 end with mourning instead of celebration. But in putting Fastrigosa into the story, Manger made it possible, even while turning the Purim comedy into a Purim tragedy, that we would experience it as comedy and laugh. And so that's it for today. Next time, we will be reading a story of Chaim Grades, My Quarrel with Herr Schraseiner. And for now, I wish you happy reading.